Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
Hi, this is Aaron Smith, half of the Innovation Calling team. And before we jump into this next episode, I have a very exciting announcement to make. What are you doing March 6th? And hopefully we will see you in the Dallas area. Yes, that is right. We are taking this live. We are doing our very first live recording at the Network Bar and kicking off our Women in Tech Leadership series. So we're going to be joined this particular date by Dr. Brenda Connor of Ericsson, who's the head of smart cities and intelligent transportation systems. We're going to have some wine. We're going to have some hors d'oeuvres. We want you to get there a little early for some networking, and we will be doing these monthly. So this is a great opportunity to meet other women, learn from some amazing women who are really trailblazing the way into tech. And this is going to be happening monthly. So head over to innovationcalling.com where you can buy your tickets. You can get on our list. So not only do you never miss an episode, but you also never miss an event. And hopefully we will see you there. Thanks as always for listening. And without further ado, here's our next episode. All right. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I'm Sia Yasotornra. Today, we have a wonderful guest today. Corey Faruqi is joining us. He is the CEO of Inventera, a really great organization that has gone ups and downs and is on the mend and growing yet again. But also, Corey is a international senior executive and deal maker. You're a mover and shaker, Corey. Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast.
Well, thanks, Sia, and thanks, Aaron. And I appreciate you guys having me on your podcast. And I just love hanging out with you guys anyways. I'd love to kind of describe what it is that I'm working on and participate in your podcast.
Well, so, we've got a shiny word. We got AI today. We always try to get some good hashtags. So we got the AI hashtag. So thank you for bringing that to us. And Sia, go ahead.
Well, you know, I've got Big Four Consulting here, another little buzzword. But there's quite a few different areas that we can take you because you are a serial entrepreneur. You've been everywhere, Corey. So I don't want to go down your entire life history because we'll never get to any substantial conversations. So let's talk about and let's dig into Inventera immediately,
sure,
which is your services company. And on your website, you do have a little bit of a background of where you guys were 2 years. You grew up to 700 employees. I don't want to delve into the horror stories, but I am intrigued by the fact you would admit that on your website. So help me understand, you know, very brief synopsis, what happened there?
So, you know, first of all, my entire career is based on consulting and 20 plus years of consulting. But my goal with my clients has always been to be a trusted advisor. And I feel that in order to get there, you need to ensure that the foundation of that relationship is based on honesty and realism. And so as an entrepreneur, I've gone through that journey. And so we started we grew like gangbusters in the first couple of years. And that was between 2006 and 2008. And we had a unique business model. Then the economy kind of shook us up as it did everybody. And we kind of hummed along for the next few years. And the next few years are very critical between 2010 and 2016, because you have the introduction and implementation of very future-focused technologies. So there's been a sort of a tipping point and a turning point in industry that is unlike any in the past. There, all the things that have been developed in the past, your ERP and your CRM, and your all the other things have sort of built in and built up to what we see today in the form of implementation of AI, automation, autonomous systems, and all the other type of technologies that are out there. That's what Inventera does. And we sort of take our clients through this journey of making them realize the importance of that change, where irrespective of how big you are, in which industry you're focused in. There's a couple of guys in a garage putting together a scrappy startup that is about to topple over your industry. And so you need to harness that. You need to leverage your financial power and your market leadership to ensure that you own that disruption. So we take our clients first and foremost through a phase of implementation of intelligent automation and our robotic process automation, RPA, where we create lean operating models. And these are software robots that mimic human behavior. And it's imperative for a company to do that. Think about back in the day when physical robots were replacing your blue-collar workforce in factories. Today, we have software robots replacing repetitive jobs like accounting and HR.
So like more like the mundane tasks. It's almost like
data scientists.
So
yeah. Let me talk about that.
It's about the repetitive behavior in an organization, like accounting, HR, invoice processing, and then it kind of grows from there. And so we implement that, and then we say, okay, now that you've created this lean operating model, let's talk about the future. And so our second phase of that journey is strategizing with our clients on where they want to be, what kind of predictive models they need, what kind of AI tools they want to implement in their ecosystem or upgrade their own platforms to ensure AI and data capture. And we create that roadmap for them. And while we're doing that roadmap, we're also doing sort of a gap analysis on how ready they are to get there, in terms of people, process, tools, and technologies, and their ability to innovate. And the last part of the journey is implementing that roadmap through implementation of tools, customizing these tools, building these tools, and then building offshore teams, which we call labs teams. And labs, sort of an R&D word, but stands for Leveraged Automation and Business Sciences Team. So these are your teams of data scientists, AI engineers, DevOps resources, and all the future-focused resources that will ensure that journey towards the digital enterprise.
Wow, that was a mouthful of a lot of what you do. So let's take one word that you used, which was journey.
Sure.
For me, if someone's going to take me on a journey, I'm going to be like, okay, what's this for, right? So why are you taking these businesses on this journey? For what purpose?
So the journey is very important because what I tell my clients and the executives that lead these organizations is you want to be the person that saved your enterprise and not the last person that could have. And so you don't want your head in the sand or be blindsided by, you know, a couple of guys trying to get some rent money in San Francisco and filling up an air mattress, and suddenly Airbnb is, you know, giving the entire hoteling industry all over the world a run for their money.
Right.
And so you want to understand what's going on. And in order to understand that, you've got a blue sky. You've got to understand what's coming, the next generation. And so we create these roadmaps. And those roadmaps aren't, you know, you don't turn on, flip on a switch, or it's not an implementation. It is a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. But that journey, at the end of it, it changes your mindset. It changes the way you think. It changes the way you look at your own organization and the future of it, and ensuring that complacency never sets in.
So, well, can I just ask this, though? Because we just had a podcast the other day about innovation. And so here's what's interesting to me. Let's say you give a hotel a 360-degree look at everything, and they know they need to innovate. They do. And then you're like, hey, look at this little Airbnb shop over here. How easy is it and how realistic is it for them to see the 360 view and be like, oh, yeah, we need to make a drastic shift here, versus a lot of these enterprises are so set in what they're doing and set in their ways that even it's like they don't believe they believe they're invincible, right? They think something can't disrupt them. Like, yeah, exactly. Blockbuster. We just were having a conversation about GameStop the other night. Like, they did nothing to change. You saw what PlayStation and Xbox were doing in their games, but GameStop was like, yeah, okay, whatever, we're invincible. So how do you, even with that view, help these companies like really turn the ship?
So, you know, the first thing I talk to my clients about, and I take them through this 10-step sort of process. And the first thing is that you have to, if the iceberg is, and so to kind of give you an analogy of an iceberg. So the iceberg is in your view. If your line of sight, it's already too late.
Okay.
So you have an option. You can continue towards the iceberg, or you can bail. Turning is not an option. And I'll give you an example of an industry where turning isn't an option. And that's the newspaper industry.
Right.
Right? So the coming generation, my kids, they've never felt a newspaper. And so to continue printing newspaper, to continue trying to charge for a subscription model is not a way to save your enterprise. You've got assets, you've got cash. What you need to do is create a new business model that engages the next generation. And that's the time that you take that and you bail and you create that new model and you can continue quality journalism. But to understand all of that, the first thing you've got to understand is what is it that you're exactly selling? So you mentioned Blockbuster, you mentioned all these other companies, GameStop. I like to give the example of Toys R Us.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first thing I tell these executives and any entrepreneur even is that even, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're striking matches on so I call it a wet box of matches. An entrepreneur will know that he keeps striking because one of those things is dry. But you get your fire going, and now your company is big, and it's the market leader. What got you there is your product, your service, and all of that stuff. But more importantly, it's your desire to keep striking. The day you stop striking matches, that's when complacency sets in. And that's the end of innovation. And so, you know, as Mark Twain said, even if you're on the right path and you quit moving, you're going to get run over. So you look at these organizations like Blockbuster and Toys R Us, they quit innovating. So I challenge the Toys R Us story. Yes, debt was the final nail in their coffin, but if they turned back time and understood that they were never selling toys, what they were selling was the experience that a kid felt of going into a toy store. So they were selling experience of joy. So they were never competing with Walmart. Because right. Walmart was selling...
It's not a joyous place.
Well, no. Well, hey, don't be knocking. Well, we could be interviewing them next.
Yeah, well, aside from not a... You. That's not the point. The point is, Toys R Us sells toys. I mean, sorry.
Things.
Walmart sells toys. But what Walmart is actually selling is the convenience of buying those toys while you're doing your grocery.
Right.
Right.
Right? So Toys R Us sold joy. And because they kept competing with price, yeah, it affected their everything else, the symptoms of poor customer service or high prices, all of that. So what I tell them is if you could turn back time and get rid of 2/3 of your inventory because you just can't compete with Amazon or Toys or
make
Walmart.
Make it focused. Yeah.
Take the empty space that you've gotten rid of your inventory in the aisles, that in the shelves that contain that, and create slime centers and building blocks and sand pits and Barbie castles and train tracks where the kids could come in
and immerse themselves.
And immerse themselves.
Yeah.
Even pay for an entry.
Right.
And then the parents are now impulsively, you know, doing an impulse buy to walk out. They're still feeling that joy. So you're now competing with the Disney World, right? The creating of the joy.
I think you just created a new business. It was literally come in, kids play with the next latest, greatest toys. And you can't tell me you're not going to get an upsell at the end of that thing. Like,
right,
think of having a birthday party where they're, here's sure, the latest and greatest toy.
So,
oh, my
so
God.
They had,
we're starting a new business, everyone. Let's do it.
They had 1,734 locations globally when they filed bankruptcy. Imagine over 1,700 neighborhood Disney's or entertainment centers where your kid is getting these joy. Now you're going out and you're dragging out because clients have to understand that it's imperative for them to identify their customers and understand the experience those customers get. Now, after they do that, you have to know your customer. So they call it the KYC, know your customer. How do you know your customer? Well, you know your customer because today your customer is leaking data. We right. all carry smartphones that are, you know, the battery in our smartphones doesn't go low because it's, you know, we're making calls. It's because every single app is telling,
its you know, own,
it's brokering data.
Yep.
So you've got to capture that data. You have to understand your customer. That future generation that's coming, they'll enter a restaurant and they'll say, what do you mean you don't know what I want to eat? Why are you giving me the menu? You know what song I was listening to? You should have known what I'm going to eat, right? So these are the expectations of that future generation. So now, irrespective of which industry you are in, you've got to leverage technology to get your, know your customer, to save money. You look at, you know, large manufacturing companies or whatever, a large enterprise that has inventory that's depreciating, but they're keeping it because they never know when something's going to break. Do I need one of them or 10 of them or do I need any? And does it become old before it even needs to be changed? So why not create these predictive models that will allow you to know when something is going to break or know when something needs to get updated? All of that requires data. Data is the fuel for all of these future generational tools and technologies, AR, VR, AI, automation, autonomous, every single thing in every single industry, in healthcare research, in all of it. And so that's why we call it a journey, because the first part of that journey is to streamline that data process by automating, removing the redundancy of human element, and then harvesting that data for your future-driven technologies.
So you said predictive, which is intriguing to me because I have this Minority Report, you know, a Hollywoodified version
sure.
of predictive and prescriptive platforms and whatnot. I mean, isn't there a real concern that the predictive, you're only as good as the data that's given to you?
So, sure.
So help me and allay my fears of this predictive analysis could be counter to my best interests, or it may not be relevant to my interests. So help me understand that.
So see, you bring a very, very good point. And that's the point of what we call machine bias, right? So first of all, when people think AI, they automatically think Terminator or robots.
And no, me never.
And you know, what AI is, it's simply the algorithm that a human being takes to make a cognitive decision. And if it means reading a contract and amending it, and whatever I did in terms of the if-thens in my mind to understand that, or it means going from my from my work to my house and looking at the traffic. So in order for us to ensure that there's no machine bias, right? So yes, so there's, I'll give you an example. There's a tool that law enforcement uses to predict the likelihood of a released prisoner.
The recidivism?
Yeah, exactly. They're likely to be committing a crime. Now, the algorithms that were created by some guy sitting in a lab looking at data and a formula and putting it together. The machine bias, the Pew Charitable Research found out that more black people were being predictive in terms of recommitting a crime. When that's not true, so that's what we call machine bias. And that's sort of the harmony in the future in my mind, of where humans and machine work together towards a utopian future versus a dystopian future.
So basically what you're saying is look, you can simplify a lot of tool or tasks and automate that. But what you're saying is, look, that could be simplified and automated, less human touching it, but the human element is not removed completely. So what we're saying is what you're arguing is, we're not eliminating jobs completely. The humans are going to be doing something different.
Yeah. So There's a big debate in this industry on should we automate and what's going to happen to all the jobs. And, you know, first of all, there's no moral dilemma there. Because what I tell my clients is, you know, there's no moral obligation to save the assembly line. If you try to save the assembly line, you're risking the entire enterprise because the consumer is going to push you towards cheaper, better, faster. And the only way you can get there is machines and automation and robots and robotics. Today, we buy phones that if we had humans creating them from beginning to end, they'd be as big as this table and clunky and super expensive. And so the consumer doesn't want it. So the consumer pushes it. And in order for you to save that enterprise, you have the moral obligation to innovate. And so the moral obligation to innovate is predicated on technology and where humans fit in. And where humans fit in is what makes us human. And what makes us human is our ability to capture our senses and have our emotions, empathy, apathy, passion, love, creative thinking, thinking outside of the box, and coming up with these creative ideas and creative solutions to then have a machine, execute it. So we can't compete against a machine. We haven't been able to compete it since, you know, somebody invented a calculator. And going forward, it's really looking at AI as a force enabler. And so humans have always used force enablers. When we were cavemen and we were trying to pop open a coconut, you know, we picked up a rock and hit it on the coconut and we created the first hammer. Right. And so we've created these force enablers that extend our ability to do something. Today's hammer is AI. Right. Not in a bang something way, but in a how do you get to the next level? How do you go through all the permutations to come up with a cure for cancer? How do you look at all of the signs and symptoms and put that data together to put a data model together that can predict someone's likelihood to get a disease or things like that? And there's some crazy research that's been going on where, for example, at MIT, they're researching wearable tattoos that change in a way based on what you ate and your medical history to give you a warning sign way before it happens. And so you will see that insurance companies, they're already doing it. And there's the biggest life insurance company in the world is saying in order to get your life insurance, you need to wear a wearable smartwatch where we can monitor this stuff, right? So
You're okay.
So it is.
Aaron's smiling at me.
The point is, it is what it is.
It's going to happen.
It is happening. Yeah. You shouldn't be fighting it because we today use AI constantly.
Right.
You know, we don't want our data being given out, but before we go home, we're looking at Google Maps and we're saying, oh, there's this red over here, so I'm going to go take this route, or Waze is telling you which way to go. And the only way that's happening is these cars have people sitting in them that are
feeding the data.
Telling you that, hey, this phone is traveling 5 miles an hour when it should be traveling 70. So we use it. We need it. Now, the utopian path is to ensure its security, that it doesn't go down the Minority Report path, and that the human element is there. But, you know, certainly skills of the future is not a specialist. It's certainly a generalist, someone that has the ability to do this interaction, be a human.
Right.
And, you know, as kids are growing up with these iPads and screens and conveniences in front of them, they're losing a lot of that. So
that frightens me, by the way. And I don't have kids. And of course, it's easy for me to say it.
I have a few.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had them for you.
Yeah.
Can I ask about the size of companies that you work with, though? Because this has to be a pretty large expense to come in. And there's a line, like even smart data can be used for small businesses, but to really, right now, you have to have a pretty big budget to be able to take over. What would you say minimum size companies are that really can take advantage of this right now? And then how do you see that in the future where small businesses can take more advantage of this?
So, you know, it's this technology, especially when you look at intelligent automation or robotic process automation, mm-hmm. And any kind of technology, it's always scared the small businesses because they think, oh, we don't need it or we can't afford it. And the big guys are saying, hey, you know, we'll try everything. The beauty of this thing is that it's very affordable. I'll give you an example. If you have a enterprise or a company that is, say, 1,000 people, and you've got, let's say, 10 people doing your accounting and processing your invoices, 10 and let's say a loaded cost of $100,000 per resource, insurance, your computer, desk, office space, electricity, all that stuff. That's $100,000 per resource, right? Times 10, mm-hmm. you're looking at $1 million spend on just your finance and accounting function. A bot costs $10,000 a year license. So there's no cost. Comparison. The ROI is immediate. Now, yes, it helps when there are enough people in the enterprise for the enterprise leaders to accept that, let me try this out. Smaller companies aren't willing. But, you know, we've had clients that are small, very lean, 20, 30 people that are implementing automation and looking at AI and passing that on to their customers and competing against enterprises within their industry. And then we have very, very large Fortune 100 companies that are certainly looking at it and looking at all different facets of it and having the money to spend on it. But the key is having the right mindset and the leadership to innovate.
Yeah, I was just going to argue, I think almost counter is when you have more of that mid-tier space, they have the flexibility and agility to implement something, and odds are high their systems are not so convoluted
100%
from like acquisitions or just antiquated technologies from never upgrading. I'd almost venture to guess big corporations, Fortune 100s, etc., they have the luxury of already having an established, you know, brand, business, maybe they are the behemoth in their own respective industry, but man alive, they probably have some old ass legacy systems that they cannot upgrade, or for whatever reason don't want to upgrade,
or don't even know they exist. They're just paying for it, and they don't even know if they're using it, but they don't want to mess with it because it may break something else, right? These and you've been in consulting, and you know one of my no names mentioned, very 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 large retail client of mine, just enormous list of application stack.
Yeah.
That they didn't even know what they were doing with, but they didn't want to get rid of it. They don't want to touch it. And so the problem is more in the large companies, a bureaucracy, the human element of preservationists,
mm-hmm.
where, listen, I'm going to retire in a few years. I'm okay. You know, I'm just going to kind of ride this out. And those are the people I say that you want to save this enterprise. Your legacy isn't going to be that you retired and this is something you kicked down the road. It's that you let this company go. And you need to understand there's enough stories out there that in a heartbeat, giant organizations that we grew up with mm-hmm. don't exist anymore. And it takes a scrappy startup to accelerate. You've got a guy selling books 10 years ago as the richest guy in the world right now.
I mean, I cannot, my mind is absolutely blown every time I think about that, but.
Over 60% of U.S. households have an Amazon Prime account. They've committed to Amazon. Over 60%.
But here's the thing about Amazon that they've done a really good job is their diversity, right? They've diversified their portfolio. It's not just their market front that everyone knows of or their Alexa products. It's their AWS, you know, business that's actually making a ton of money for them, right?
Yeah.
So I mean,
it's... You're exactly right.
I mean, who would have thought...
It's not the books.
Yeah. Who would have thought a books, basically, for all intents and purposes, an online bookstore would be one of the forefront leaders of cloud?
Yeah.
I mean...
Who thought that? And so I really applaud the entrepreneurial giants of today that were nowhere a few years ago. The, you know, the Jeff Bezos and the Elon Musks of the world that are looked upon as heretics and entrepreneurs. We're all entrepreneurs. We're always looked upon as heretics, but we're explorers.
Right.
And here's Elon Musk pushing the limits on space exploration and electric cars and, you know, going from point A to point B at a super high speed, where...
Making flamethrowers, apparently.
You know, where, you know, his what do you, the not the high-speed train, but whatever, the thing that he's underground, boring company that he's created, and creating this tube.
Hyperloop.
So, you know, the question is, was asked of him that, you know, if you're going to go that fast, the human body is going to shatter. Like, it can't handle that. And so his answer to that was, yeah, that's a problem right now. It's not that it can't be done,
right?
But let's look at that. Let's look at how to figure it out, right? And so, Amazon growing and diversifying and all these things is great, and they're leveraging their revenue and their wealth to do that, and that's awesome. But from their competing against the marketplace, the typical marketplace, they're not selling products. They're selling the convenience of ordering that product without any human interaction, having it delivered to your doorstep within an hour. And so if you are a storefront in a mall and you're worried about Amazon, you've got the wrong idea of who your competitor is, right? As a human today, if I'm at the mall, I've already made the decision to inconvenience myself, get in the car, go to the mall, walk around. And so... I'm not there to shop. I'm there to experience. Sell me experience.
True. Well, right? And you're seeing that change, though, because, like, Crayola experience. I just took my kids to the Crayola experience.
Exactly.
In the mall. You see the mall down there, like, this whole... It is like, I need to get people here, and the stores aren't cutting it, right? And how do I create that? And then, by the way...
And I love the Crayola story on the Crayola experience, because here's a company that is selling their entire product line, can be taken over by a stylus and a screen.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
An app, a stylus, and a screen, free. And that's their entire product line. Not only that, but they are at the mercy of the retail outlets to sell their products.
Yeah.
So how do they ensure that the next generation understands what a crayon is and what the experience of writing with a crayon is? And the Crayola Center is awesome because you can burn a crayon, you can melt your name into it.
So you do artwork. Now they're like really pushing like the other uses of the crayon.
Yeah.
So are you basically saying then, like, so the leadership of entrepreneurs back in, you know, the day, you know, in our ute, strapping ute, are now like the major titans of corporations today, right? Back then and today. Are you saying they are like your, I would say, maybe the first generation of your next gen ninja that you talk about?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about this next gen ninja.
What a transition, Sia. Yeah. That's good.
All right. Well,
I'm growing.
So as I mentioned, I'm writing a book that's sort of based. I take my 10-step process and I've created 10 chapters, each chapter being a time capsule in the future over the next 100 years. And I'm telling it as a story through the eyes of my kids as they're growing up. And it's a story about their lives, but their interactions with some business lesson and some lessons for humanity. So what I hope to gain out of this, and what I hope that my these readers of this book would gain out of it, is a business lesson on what it took for a company to survive and what happened when a company failed and why it failed in a world of AI, in a future of AI. And also, more importantly, how humanity should take a utopian path versus a dystopian path to leverage these tools and these technologies. And so the website is nextgen.ninja. I also do a lot of public speaking on this topic, and so it's sort of my public speaking platform. And I'm going to be hopefully looking at interviewing some industry leaders that are next generation ninjas. And so I call them next generation ninjas because they are in a sort of stealth way ensuring the future of their enterprise and the future of humanity by leveraging technology. And so there's a few people that I have in mind, and certainly you need to be a next gen ninja, if you will, to ensure the survivability of your enterprise today. The other point you brought on is about the entrepreneurs of today. Entrepreneurs are visionaries, and most of the companies out there, it doesn't matter how big they are, Walmart or Apple or Samsung or whatever, were once started by an entrepreneur. Right. And their vision is executed by a pragmatic individual that's the chief operating officer. And many times you see the end of innovation and entrepreneurialism and breaking the rules and pushing the horizon further and further when the visionary CEO moves on, or in the case of Apple, unfortunately passes away. And the CEO sort of assumes that. And CEO is engineered, wired to be a pragmatic person. And that's when they quit striking those proverbial matches. They let complacency set in because they're not as, they're more risk averse.
Well, their job is to be running the business, right, at that point, once it gets to that certain level.
Yeah, well, then it takes, I talk about Apple. I mean, Apple, Steve Jobs was an amazing visionary and bending the rules constantly. And now you've got the 11th iteration of the same product. 11 years. How long are you going to ride this wave? How long are you going to abuse your cult into convincing them
they need the new one?
They need the new one when it's not really that much different than the old one. And in this year, the lowest model of the new one has less features than last year's model.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Or that what Samsung did 2 years ago, you're like selling it as the new cool thing, right? Because, right. I mean, it's really falling off.
You've got five more megapixels. You got it.
Yeah. So innovation is necessary. It's imperative. And it's more imperative today than, it, in my opinion, has ever been before.
Yeah. So this is a great conversation, Corey, and I want to be respectful for your time. I mean, it sounds like to me, with all the little fingers you've got in the baskets everywhere, and obviously as another entrepreneur, you can't just do one thing. You have to do like 800 things. So, I mean, to summarize, Invitera, services consulting organization, in essence, what you guys do is take corporations, mid-tier enterprise customers, startups, et cetera, on a journey to understand what the next generation of business will look like through automation, through processes.
How did they become a digital enterprise? And so it's the journey towards the digital enterprise. And it starts first. And, you know, it starts first with automation because the AI is expensive, but the automation
enables AI.
That. So you take those cost savings and then you implement strategy and you implement technology and tools. And the beauty of these tools are you're not replacing your legacy systems. You can keep your legacy systems. I'm working with a few clients that are looking at investing millions of dollars in a new ERP system. And they're saying, hold on, let's pause this. We were doing this because we wanted to create efficiency. We're just going to put these bots. The bots will work with the old system too, faster. So low tech, more business side, and automating. And so that journey, towards the digital enterprise is what Invitera does.
Excellent. And then we also discussed earlier today was, you know, bringing the human element and the AI element together into a not, was it utopian, not dystopian perspective.
Right.
automation will evolve the way we interact with technology and what our skill sets are going to have to do, but there's always going to be human element to it. So that's, you know, along with the predictive and prescriptive, you know, automated platform that you talk about and that what you help on.
Yeah, I mean,
there's still a human element to it.
You look at the dystopian. So Dick Cheney, for example, when he got his pacemaker, he disabled the remote charging, where you can, you know, charge it
remotely.
Remotely.
Okay.
He disabled it because he didn't want to get it hacked into, right?
Oh my gosh!
And so,
wow.
So that's the dystopian path. So, yes, AI is awesome, is a force enabler from a utopian perspective, because you are able to find new cures and create new, maybe possibly solve world hunger and
cure cancer. Is my,
you know, have free healthcare because you've automated and you've lowered your costs and you offering it back to the citizens. The dystopian path is just equally as big of a hammer, where you've got nefarious activities that are that much more. So you will see those things, right? You will see the bad elements creating, leveraging it, and you'll see the good elements leveraging it to fight. But my goal is that humanity focuses more on the utopian aspect.
And the way you're going to execute that is obviously with your book, Next Gen Ninja, and the branding and your public speaking around that whole idea.
And hopefully coaching and consulting executives on one-on-one to kind of understand that mindset and move towards that mindset.
And understand that the next 100 years is going to result in a much more utopian
ideally,
world than versus dystopian. So, Corey, I have to say thank you so much for your time and joining us. Aaron,
yes,
do you have any questions?
You. No, this has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Aaron and Sia, thank you so much for having me. I really, really enjoyed our conversation.
I don't want you to say thank you just yet. How do we get a hold of you, Corey, or if anyone of our audience wants to get a hold of you?
So the website is Invetera, I-N as in Nancy, V as in Victor, A-T-E-R-R-A .com. And it's Corey, K-O-R-Y, at Invetera.com, or you can go to nextgen.ninja. So all of that information is out there, and I'd love to hear from people.
Excellent. And we will actually put that up on our show notes.
Over at innovationcalling.com.
Thank you very much. And that will wrap it up for another episode of Invetera. Let's try this again. Innovationcalling.com. Bye-bye.